You are listening to.
Listening to.
You are listening to.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
BlackIsOnline.com.
Break!
What's going on, y'all? Thank you for tuning in to the Black Is Network. You were checking out the Black Is Break, hosted by KC Layman. It's your man Chris, one half of the brothers Layman. So this week's discussion is a part two from last week of the show entitled Are We Angry Enough? Where we talked about the Charleston church shooting, the Confederate flag being removed, and asked the question, what is the consequence for the mistreatment of black people? First, I want to give some love before we get into this episode. I want to give some love to Colin and PDAT, who left some feedback on the website. Colin left a great one for this episode of Are We Angry Enough? PDAT left a nice one for the previous episode, the Hot Dogs and Netflix. They are kind of long. They are good as well. And I want to read them out to the crew so we can actually discuss them a little further. So I will be reading your comments on the show, so we can discuss them further. I just want to give some love to them for leaving some feedback on the website. Also want to give a shout out on Twitter to Queen Neen, Lady Rowe, who enjoyed the show. Loved the conversations and discussions that we had. We appreciate it. And want to give a shout out to, hope I'm pronouncing his name right, Benjamin Janowitz, who actually quoted some lines from the show on Twitter. A number of them, so we appreciate that. You know, we enjoyed discussions. There were a lot of great points made, and I'm glad you enjoyed some of them, so we appreciate that. So in this part two discussion, we actually start getting into allies, and in terms of, do we invite other people in to help us fight this battle, you know, make it more of a human rights issue, and then how we fix our own battles. And then we get into Obama's eulogy, which was very interesting as well. So the crew around the table for this episode is KC, myself, Shelby, Arian, Merc 80, Toria, Tash, Leisha, the other Chris, and Isley a little bit. So if you guys want to leave us any comments, any feedback, you can do so on the website, blackisonline.com. You can also do it via email at kc@blackisonline.com, on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, and on Twitter, Black Is Online, or you can leave a message on the hotline, 323-455-4219. Thanks for listening.
We can unlearn it.
I'm going to jump in real quick with a couple of things. I mean, as we're saying, like, this comes down to, I think, like, a basic human rights issue. You know what I mean? It's really like that. And, like, I'm not going to lie. I think that between Obama and even Eric Holder, you know, suing the Ferguson police, like, started making me really think a little bit, a lot bigger, actually. And that I think that the primary way that we're going to get out of this, at least to me, that I think is really going to work, is when we start looking at certain issues as part of bigger systems, some that affect us more than others, but the only way that we can get other people to agree is when we start explaining, listen, this affects you too. So when Obama is saying that he wants gun control, we should be looking at shootings in Chicago or South Central or any of these other places and mass shootings. It's the same thing. We should be saying to ourselves the same way, however the fuck, like, I still can't believe that, because when all those kids got shot at that school, I was like, oh, well, clearly this is going to change. You don't roll up and shoot 5- and 6-year-olds. Like, we got a problem now. But that 5- and 6-year-olds, white kids, and they still were like, no, fuck that, we're keeping our guns. And the reason why, largely, is because a lot of people, white and otherwise, but I'm going to say mainly white, feel that if the government gets too much power, that they at least have a fighting chance for whatever resistance they want to take in case the government comes after. There's a large section of paranoia that's happening on this level with this whole gun issue. So when you have the fact that people in the hood are getting guns and schools are getting shot up and people are getting shot up on the block, that's the same thing. And for some reason for us, like, as you're saying, this kind of cognitive dissonance that we have with this and the racialization of that, we should be able to, I think that in black self-interest, we have to say that this is a bigger human rights issue and then walk across the aisle and say, no, this is happening to Mexicans, this is happening to white people, this is happening to everybody.
Right.
On top of that, when we talk about the flag, it's because this white boy whose name I've forgotten, strangely enough, Dylan Roof, like, he had the Confederate flag on him. So when the government is flying that flag, in a large sense, they're saying that they're also endorsing,
right,
you know what I'm saying, the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right. So they kind of have to, I mean, at the very least, the only other thing we can look at is, I think, governmental systems in terms of what are you endorsing? You know what I mean? Because if you're endorsing this whole gun rights thing, okay, but you're also endorsing some of these mass shootings. And so who do you think is you're going to be able to sway easier? Because most of these people, like these, you know, these low-key, what do you even call them? These, like, guerrilla military groups, right, and these, right, you know, groups, like, they're
militias.
Militias, yeah. These militias and what I consider kind of terrorist groups are actually smaller population. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I think that when it really comes down to it now, in this kind of new millennial thinking, that the things that affect black people, we have to start thinking, like, is this a bigger issue? And if it's actually just affecting us, like, it's just affecting, like, more concentrated on us, then can we do it ourselves? But when you're talking about something like where somebody can just so easily, and that doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to burn down a church. Anybody can get matches and gasoline, but there has to be something where we can tie that into a broader brand, if you will, of the Muslim homies and the Asian homies and everybody that has to kind of go through those things. And we start saying, yo, like, all of us are kind of going through this, so we got to figure this out, like, on a broader spectrum.
Because I stepped out for a second, but you mentioned the school.
Yeah.
Because to me, what was if there was no if there was no other situation where gun reform should have been on the table, like, that should have been it. Because you're talking about babies being
This dude right. Dylan Roof got that gun for like $1,000. Or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, if it's that easy for anybody who wants to do something like that to get a gun, then we need to be like, yo, we need to do something about gun reform, because who's the first person they're going to shoot? Us.
Right.
The one thing you said when you brought up, like, white militia groups, and it was always funny to me, you know, because we need our guns in case the government gets us. If you're in a militia and you go against the U.S. government, you're going to lose. Right. You're going to lose.
If now, you lock yourself in your house with your girlfriend right now, you will have a tank outside of your house army trained cops crawling up your lawn.
Right. So that's number one. Number two, I like how you brought up, you know, black people. And this is what's been strange to me. I feel like there was a period where you didn't see a lot of vocal pro-gun rights black people. And there's a lot of pro-gun right, progressive, educated black people right now. It's very interesting. I don't even know how I feel. I'm not even saying I'm pro. It's just interesting. It's just new for me to see. Now, And I want to tell these people the same thing I want to tell these white militias. If it's between you and the U.S. government, you're going to lose, which goes back to what you two were saying about economic empowerment, what Tash was saying about nonviolence as an approach, because a military approach is not an option for our community. Whether you look at the fact that we only make up 13%, whether you look at the fact that we don't have hospitals to take care of our soldiers if we had them, I mean, we're in no position to fight a military war. That aside, that's why I do think if we were to take stock of what we have, it is our consumption. It's the fact that we are consumers more than anything else and how we direct those dollars. The second thing I want to say is, and this isn't a black problem, this is a people problem now with just technology and everything, is no one's in a long-term plans, whether it's government. Like, no one does, like, 12, 15, 20-year plans anymore. That's why our infrastructure's fucked up as a nation. That, to me, is a huge thing no one talks about. So whatever black people decide to do, whatever, whether it's your community of people, right, because I'm still on this, you don't need the whole nation, you just need your group of people. Whatever it is you decide to do, make it a long-term plan. Think about generations to come and take realistic stock of what you have. So if it is an economic thing, then we have to take into account, okay, what are the steps to be economically secure as a community? And it has to be like a 20-year plan. It can't be like every solution I see, whether it's social media, magazine, whatever, it's always a year plan or a quick fix, and it's like, that shit's not going to work.
Right.
You know?
Because we have to keep in mind where our deficits are. As a community, the one thing that we don't have, which would strengthen us entirely, is our own language. Anything we do can, yes, be infiltrated and understood, yes, and decoded. You know what I mean? So we have to, you're right, keep in mind that any plan that we make, thank you for the cosign, babe, is that it is something that is long term and long standing and passed down so that the next generation continues it as well.
And going back, I've seen a lot of people with like the Donald Trump and like, let's look at what the Latinos did to impact, right, Trump. Well, it's like, well, look at their population. Like, let's just take something that has a little bit to do with racism, but then again, not. So you have the prison industrial complex that impacts our numbers. But let's just say, like, we have a lot of intelligent people in the room. I'm going to guess that most of the people in this room, if not all, have been in a situation where they're the only black person or one of the two black people in their job or one of the two black people in their class or whatever it is. That means if we went from 13 to 26%, that would be just one extra person at work. It'd be one extra person in your class. That's how small our pot. Let's just forget all the other isms, right, and the realism of the fact that we don't make up a huge percentage and we're not in certain positions to where we can take advantage of things like the Latino community can.
Right.
So it goes back to what he's saying, too. It's like, we also have to build bridges with other. I know everyone's like, well, we got to take care of others.
No, that's never, we have to work with other groups.
That's never how it's worked. We've, yeah, never worked in isolation. When we did the Voters Rights Act, yeah, it was about us in the South and racism, but that meant that everybody could vote, right?
Right.
So, like, we were talking about this Haitian-Dominican thing, and what I thought was interesting was I would tell people, well, you know, the U.S. deports Mexicans, black people, and they would jump right over that and go, but da-da-da-da, and I was like, wait. Aren't you one of these people who gets on people who aren't black, who get upset when non-black people don't comment on our tragedies? But I don't hear black people talking about deportations of Mexicans. I don't hear a lot of black people talk about anything outside of our own community. But we'll get on everybody else and say, well, Black Lives Matter. Well,
exactly.
So, I mean, we need a little bit of outside of ourselves and looking at our allies and saying, hey, we need to speak up for the deportation of Latinos. We need to speak up for some of their rights as well if we want that love back.
But I think
and
it's kind of hard to have that sympathy when I keep seeing ours being thrown out there, just to be honest. I know we need them, but right now my priority is to protect mine because that's who I see constantly being thrown out there. And I think
it's really hard to have sympathy when you see injustice against somebody else, even though you know injustice is happening against you. It's hard.
Absolutely. Like, if I'm...
I mean, I think if because you experience so much wrongdoing, it seems as if your level of understanding would be that much greater because you're like, oh, I'm in the thick of it too.
No, it's like if you're home, right? In your home, it's kind of hard to go invest and stand at the hospital for the neighbor when in your own home, people are dying off.
But if you look at the dynamic I brought up, I'm talking about Haitians. So to me, the Mexicans who are deported in California, Arizona, Texas is more your home, is more your community, to be honest, than people 800 miles away. Honestly. And Tori, I don't mean to project this on you, but that's what I've seen. I've seen, you know, and you're absolutely right. Like,
can I tell you, though, that I can't even have sympathy for the deportation of Haitians and Mexicans when I'm watching little black kids and black men being killed in the street.
Oh, like for sure.
So, you know, it's even hard to even think globally when right here in my own community it's happening.
It's difficult, but strategically you don't have an option. I guess where I'm coming from is you're absolutely right. There's a social, emotional reality to this is affecting me because this is death. But what I'm talking about in the broader scheme, we're talking about solutions.
You can't explain
forward.
That to the kids in Baltimore.
I guess.
You know what I mean? Like,
my thing is.
And not get them to understand, though.
Yeah, but you can get them to understand on the basis of a principle and being true to that principle. And the principle is of justice.
Big.
Yeah, and it's justice for ourselves, first and foremost. Like, defend yourself.
Right.
But you see, you can create allies for folks who can help defend you, because when you see that they're going through something that's similar, that you speak up on their behalf, or you just, you know, sometimes you just be a voice for it. Like, yeah, they're experiencing injustice, and just saying that and acknowledging what they're going through, because what a lot of people do to us is not acknowledge that it doesn't happen.
But that's
just
such
saying
a big
that
picture, like. Think about the young kids.
Wait. Real time. This is real time right now. Right here. Right here. Here it is.
Yeah.
This is where we're talking about. The difference in strategy. This is it right here. Because nobody's wrong. But the question is where do you start?
Right.
And where do you start saying that these things do connect? Now, the question is that when you're talking about Baltimore or L.A. or Oakland or New York, yo, has anybody studied how many Africans and Caribbeans and all these other motherfuckers are out here in our black community who, at least in L.A., it's a little bit different because sometimes, you know, Belizeans will skate through and, you know, all that stuff. They don't really count that. But when it really goes down, let's say that they really got these Mexicans out here. Then they're going to be like, well, who's next? How many more of these Ghanaians and Nigerians and shit? Where's your card at, man? You know, they come and stop me. You don't know how many people have thought that I was from Cameroon or Nigeria or whatever. And if I just so happen to not have my ID on me, I could be detained with the same people that got or getting deported. You know what I'm saying? There's people getting snatched up that are Mexican and were born here. Mm-hmm. So it can still happen to you. So even though that might be a bit of a reach, the thing that we're that going right back to the original question is, do we have to start separating what's happening in our own house when in the broader spectrum of the neighborhood or the city or the world that it could come back to us? And that what they're saying is, if the Mexican homies are going through it, we got to rush to them, because even on a strategic level, when we support them, hopefully at least, they'll support us. And it's a little bit different here in LA in a certain extent. And like I said, nobody's wrong. But the question becomes, when we start taking broader politics to say, does this still cycle back home? You know what I'm saying?
I think there is a definite need for us to have allies. The question is, who are they? We could have a conversation about going and rushing to the aid of our Mexican homies that are dealing with issues of immigration and deportation. But in the grand scheme of things, when the shit gets hot for us, are they honestly going to have our back? Because here's the thing. I remember having this conversation on UCLA's campus, let's say 15, 16 years ago. At that time, there was definitely an opportunity. Don't be trying to put age on me. There was definitely an opportunity for us to have allies, because we were talking about Prop 187 at that time. But I never forget being in the meeting, and there was one brother, who was like, we can't fuck with y'all till we get our shit together. And that kind of just ended the entire conversation. Since then, I have seen more space become in between us and them. And then from the education perspective, anybody who's worked in LA public schools, you're seeing black children kind of just disappear.
Right.
And there's been a lot of money and interest put into bilingual education and helping the Mexican population get ahead. Now, That doesn't mean that we should be on opposite ends of the spectrum, but there does need to be some balance. I'm all for us finding allies. Because like you, I mean, like you said, facts. Numbers wise, we don't have enough numbers to make enough of a noise for major change to happen. We need to pair up with somebody, but who?
Well, I want to, before we move too far away, I want to get back to the initial thing I was saying was, and I don't want to project, it's not Tory's position. I'm thinking of specific people I've seen on social media who I've seen say, you know, if, and this is specific, I'm talking about a specific type of person. I'm not talking about the community for a second. Right. I'm talking about the type of black person who says, Black Lives Matter. I'm frustrated when I don't see Latino, white, A, B, and C speak up on this, but that same person doesn't speak up on other issues. I think that's just hypocrisy. There's no other way you can look at that. That's just, and that's specifically one I want to hone in on. Okay. Now, getting back to the bigger point, it's just, I honestly think when you look at, and I'm only going to speak for California, but when you look at California activism, it's Latinos, period. I'm going to say when you look at black activism, you'll see probably as many Latinos as you will see actual people out in the streets.
Yeah.
You will see Latinos in California. Now, the rest of the nation, I don't know. So, I mean, insofar as I know it, the education system, and when it comes to fighting for educational resources, I've been a part of that fight, and they can be some shady motherfuckers. But why can't we back – why can't we buck up as black people, hang out – like, if Latinos are the big dogs and we're afraid, well, they may take some of our resources. No, buck up, be strong, and be as intellectually and economically and educationally savvy as they are and get the same – you get what I'm saying? And get the same things as opposed to saying, well, I'm not going to mess with them because they may bully us in this progressive circle. It's just – it's – I don't know.
I'll put it –
ends up being – I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No,
I'm sorry. I don't even have a mic. Yeah.
Well, just real quick, it's like this, and – this is kind of a hard question to ask that I think that might be slightly controversial, but it's like this. I've seen people of other races say, man, y'all, the unity between black people is kind of strained, or y'all not, you know what I'm saying, like connecting. And I had to ask myself if part of also the reason why they're saying that is because they're like, y'all ain't seeing us on this immigration thing. Y'all ain't coming over here. You know what I'm saying? Like, there have been some things where, I guess, you know, Cesar Chavez and a bunch of other people were connecting. And they even share in a lot of the things. They got a lot of their activism game from our ancestors.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So part of it is like, we want to connect with y'all, but y'all don't show up to us and you don't show up for yourself.
That's
yeah. You know what I'm saying? So agreed. some of our allies are out there, but they're kind of like, yo, I can't take no risks because I don't see you taking no risks.
Well, agreed. And they can't get behind us thing. If like, we don't have any sort of organization. If we're disenfranchised,
how we fight all these other global battles and we can't get our battles done. That's
I get real frustrated personally, and this is why I speak up to issues of injustice, even when it's not in my immediate community. I get real frustrated when progressive friends of another race or another persuasion or something on social media don't speak up about a situation when it's happening with black folks. Almost to the point where I will become confrontational and be like, yo, where are you at on this? And I'm not confrontational, but because I get frustrated, I speak up on LGBTQ issues. I speak up on Latino issues. I speak up. And because for me, the real cause, there's a through line. And I'm trying to connect with anyone who sees injustice, whether it be economic, whether it be racial injustice. And I want them to be an ally. And I want them to know that, yo, when shit goes down, they can call on Tash and he will be there to help serve in whichever way I can. Now, it might not be the same as my serving for some black. No, it might not be the same for my serving on Black Lives Matters movement, but I will be out there and I will be supporting the movement. And there won't be any lack of sympathy. Just the amount of time and energy I give to it might be different. Do you agree?
Thank you. Isley. She didn't even.
I want to say that to take it even just a step back, like, the motivation and I think the reasoning for me that I would always try to speak out for other groups is because there's a reason that the people in power don't want that to happen. Right. And I'm like, I'm not going to do what they want. And they don't want us to speak out for each other. And I mean, and like, to me, it's like, you just have to follow the motivations of people. And like, I see what the motivations are of, you know, whoever the quote unquote, like, ruling people are. And I'm like, whatever their motivation is, I want to do the opposite. Right. You know, I know that they have reasons for, to be excited that black people don't want to work with Mexicans. White poor people hate black poor people. Like, that's great for them. And so I'm like, that's a big reason why I argue for people being supportive. And I hear black people anti-immigration, like, yes, very openly anti, like, and I'm like, you're joining up with the racists? Like, this is a racist movement against immigration. I mean, you see what Donald Trump is saying. I mean, he is speaking for that movement. And I'm like, that's who you're going to join up with? I don't have to know anything about the issue to know that I'm not going to be on the side of Donald Trump and the racists. I don't need to know anything else. That's all I need to know.
The other thing that, and this is like, you know, also implied by a lot of what you guys have said, is that one of the problems that I think black people have in general is that we have decided, whether you agree with this or not, but we have decided that we are the most persecuted of all. And so by aligning ourselves with someone else, with another group, by aligning ourselves with another group, it somehow like diminishes, you know, the struggle. Right. And I'm like, there was an opportunity where we could have aligned ourselves with the LGBT movement. And I was, and I mean, so many, and I did, I've unfortunately didn't think it through, but I was like, dude, being gay is not the same thing as being black, but that's not the point. Right. That's not the point. And I think that that's where a lot of our opportunity gets lost, is that people automatically go to, well, immigration is the same thing as slavery. Like, slavery is, wait, rip me out my country. I don't even know who my, and that, like, okay, I get that. But that's not the point. The point is we're trying to, like, work together to move forward. And I don't really know how to undo that in black people.
I don't know if you can.
It'd be real difficult. Like, I heard something that Killer Mike said that was interesting. When his whole point, when the whole thing with, I think in Ferguson went down and all that, he was like, they just need to be aware of getting everybody to understand that they do this to black people. Do you not think they're going to do this to you?
Right.
It's just that, all right, say they get away and then black people ain't no problem no more. You think people who have that power are just going to be like, okay, now that I got rid of them, I'm just going to give this power up and not really use it. You're going to be like, this shit works. Let me see if I can do it to these people next.
Right.
And I don't think the masses have figured that out yet. I think they're just okay. Like, all right, it doesn't really happen. It's just the black people. You know, it happens to Latinos a lot. And I think it's just going to continue until we put a stop. I think the cameras is cool, but it's going to be a lot more needed than that.
And you bring up another thing, is that police brutality isn't just a black issue.
No.
Like, they beat up Latinos.
Yes.
Just like they beat us up. People. So it's like, if to that extent we're treated the same, then at least on that front we can unify. And what's so funny to me, I love that you brought up how there's so many, like, I see a lot of black people get so caught up in being gay is different than being black. You're right. You're stating the obvious, right? But at the same time, it doesn't alleviate your responsibility for justice.
Right.
And I hear what the other thing that's so funny is, it's just different. It's just different. But the way black people who say they're not homophobic talk about homosexuality and LGBTQ community sounds like white people. It's like, oh, it's a different thing. Why do they have to stuff it down our throats? Yeah. You sound like the white people in the 60s. Why do they have to stuff black stuff down our throat? It's like, I'm not racist, but I'm not homophobic, but it's, even though they're two different things, the way you are talking about this struggle sounds like the way white people talked about our struggle.
Yeah, I said this before on this podcast, that like, there are definitely black people that, were they just born white, would be the racist white people that we talk about. They're that delusional. It's like, outside of what affects them. So they're go hard for black people, black causes, anything else. They see no like connection and no empathy. And I'm like, but that's why we're in the situation we are. The lack of empathy a lot of times on the white people. You know, it's amazing. Amazing.
Can we talk about Reverend Pinckney's service? Did any of you see it?
I didn't see it.
Okay.
And then can you say who this person is?
Okay, Reverend Pinckney was the minister and the senator that was killed in the church. It was his church. Mother Emanuel in South Carolina. His service was very interesting, mainly because of President Obama's eulogy. Mm-hmm. His eulogy, if ever there was a moment we wanted to say, we're not hearing President Obama speak enough on behalf of black people, he chose that moment to be as militant as I've heard him be. It actually was not a eulogy. Because he admitted from the beginning, I don't really know him. I just had the good fortune of meeting him a few times. But it was his moment to speak about how black people just need not kind of sit on their laurels and expect change to just kind of come. You know, it's like you can turn the other cheek, you can be forgiving, but that's not all God is calling you to do. You know, and he didn't go, you know, he didn't throw a fist in the air, no shit like that. But I think he was, I got what it was he was trying to say. We can't let situations like this happen and just fall right back into routine as usual. If it doesn't affect us, it's not going to affect anybody. And it'll just continue to be a cycle as it has been for the last, now going on, what, 2-3 years? You know, excuse me, which brings me back to the point of like, when do we get angry? When do we get angry? Shit.
Yeah, we are angry. It's just when we gonna actually do something and just kind of like not
do something constructive.
Right. Yeah, people are doing stuff. They're dancing on flags, stepping on flags, fucking your flag, all that kind of stuff. But when are we going to do something that actually progresses us forward? And changes things for us.
That's the question. I guess when we feel like we're willing to put our lives behind it. Well, everything else is happening right now. We're
exactly
like,
it.
And I get not wanting to. And we always think, okay, that means we're going to have to be like the 54th. And then we got to be on the front line. And we're going to be the first people shot. It's not about that. Everybody has a role.
And nobody wants to move.
It's just, are you willing to?
Nobody wants to move.
Yeah, most of the people who made it happen was like, like people who did the sit-ins and all that, even though we feel like that was nonviolent, it was stupid. I'm like, these people were willing to get their ass kicked to be like, no, you can't just, I can't, I want to eat in here. It's a public spot. Let me eat. And you can't just be like, no, you can't come in here. And they just spit on them and all that. And it worked. I mean, it took a long time. It wasn't just like, I'm going to do it one time. You had to keep doing it to where it happened. And you had to do it to where you had the camera on you. Yeah. To where you saw regular people who were like, damn, like white folk were like, oh, that's kind of fucked up. Like, that's your response?
At Shelby's point, that is where we're spoiled and privileged because none of us want to go through that.
Nope.
Well, also, I mean, I think it's hard in when you were in the civil rights movement and it was blatantly like, okay, this is a whites only diner or whatever. It was very easy to know what to attack, how to attack it. I mean, if that was your chosen attack method, they knew what they were gonna do and all that stuff. And I mean, we don't have like the diner to go sit in right now,
right? Where would we go to get beat up and spit on?
So people, I think people don't feel like they know what they could do. Mm-hmm. And so that's why my option is vote, people. That would start it. I mean, if everybody started voting, at least maybe I feel like that could be a first step to this because we don't have any other sources of power. So, I mean, like we talked about money and voting. That's it.
Consistently, please vote consistently.
It was funny, I was typing something and you brought up Selma. And I have this thing. There's two organizations to me that always keep their eye on the ball but are seen as passe by intellectuals or progressives, and that's the Nation of Islam and black churches. And whether you like them or you don't like the approach, whatever, they're always talking about our community and always talking about ways to improve them. And I always see people, nobody talks about black-on-black crime, go to a black church. Because all the marches in Inglewood and all that, they're organized by black churches. So whether you like them or not, or you think they're whatever, those are the two things that keep them on the ball. And it's so funny you brought up voting. We have to be careful about like how we talk about like I feel like even sit-ins or boycotts are seen as passe, or a lot of things in the '60s are seen as passe. What I loved about the film Selma is if you are a black progressive who looks at King or looks at that movement as passe or it wasn't really productive, it actually, there's a scene where he's talking to the president at the time, Lyndon B. Johnson. And the movie makes this very good connection between voting and saving black lives. He says, as long as we don't have the Civil Rights Act and we can't vote in judges who will have punitive, you know, consequences for police and for white citizens killing black people. And I mean, that was like DuVernay saying, hey, wake up. If you don't, there is a connection between your political participation and saving black people. Yep. Then and now. And so, like, that piece about voting, there's, like, to me, there's this passe thing. It's black churches, NOI, voting, and you tell this to people who call themselves progressive, and they go, oh, well, that hasn't worked. And that, actually, it kind of has worked. You know, I'd rather be, as much as I have my critiques about the civil rights movement and peace, blah, 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 I'd rather be a black person circa now than then. Even with the killings, because they were killing us then. Because people were killing us then. So I'd still, like, if you ask me what period I'd want to be as a black person, I'd probably always pick the future. Like, right. I always pick, you know, except for when we ran shit. But other than that,
right.
So, yeah, it's a great point.
Definitely.
Right. And can I say, I think from an economic standpoint, it would benefit us to continue to invest in the communities where we predominantly are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It does not do anything to move yourself way away from the community at all. I think whenever we've been an intimidating factor as a community has been when we've economically had some strength and had businesses that we supported of one another. Now, I'm in the thick of gentrification in my community now. And so as far as black owned businesses, that part is hard. But if you're willing to go the extra mile and the person who you support, who takes care of you, who's black outside of your hairstylist and your barber, like, go for it. Go to that black owned gas station. Well, we don't have any grocery stores right now, but there are black farmers.
Can I buy my TV from a black person? That's what I want to do.
But there's black farmers. There are black farmers, you know, so this whole situation of where people set up these monthly deliveries of their produce to the house, you can do that with a black farm. You know, just find ways, reach out and ask questions and find ways to spend your money within the community. And really, for all of us, like, young, up and coming, you know, you're saving your money, you're looking to invest in your community. Even if you decide, okay, I'm going to invest and have some income property here, and you still decide you want to live elsewhere, it means something to put some money, own something in the area, because then you have control over who stays there and who lives there. And you have a say-so in the changes that come to the community. You have a say-so in the businesses that come into the community. You can't be pissed about it if you don't have an investment in it.
That's all very true.
There you go.
And that's all we have to say on this topic, because it could go on for hours. We thank you so much for joining us. Please check back in with the next Black Is Break. Peace.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Is Break. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up, let us know what you think. You can reach us on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, on Twitter at Black Is Online. You can hit us up via email at kc@blackisonline.com. Leave a message on the hotline, 323-455-4219. You can always check us out on our website, blackisonline.com. Thanks again.